Joey and the Portal by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2009. It's expected that teenagers will raise some kind of ruckus. Maybe some nonsense of style, like wearing your pants about your knees or dyeing your hair some unnatural color. Teens often pick music that gives pain, either from intensity or its kinship with noise, or both. Tattoos come and go, as does body piercing. Each cohort has its own theme. While a parent might become irate, there will be no mention of similar temporary madness in which they once participated. Joey was worrisome to both parents and friends. He was so hooked on ideas that he was an outsider to his own generation. Having read about Thomas Edison, he knew he wasn't the only person who ever lived who wondered about the world. Yet he was letting his wild years go by without being wild. His idea of a good time was to spend as much of his weekend as possible at the Lawrence Hall of Science atop Strawberry Canyon in Berkeley. Rubbing elbows with the sons and daughters of PhDs was his idea of fun. Doing science networking was his passion. He scored big time when he met Don Watts. Don's dad, Stan, taught at the university in the grad school. His specialty was magnetic resonance imaging, MRI. Joey wrangled an invitation to visit Stan's classroom and lab, where future imaging techniques were being worked on. A student who introduced himself as Paul met them at the lab door. If either of you has anything with a magnetic stripe, like a transit pass or a credit card, please put it in this locker. Probably a good idea to unload any electronics or watches here, too. See that line of green tape on the floor? On the other side, the magnetic field is so high it will erase magnetic stripes and seriously mess up electronics and mechanisms containing magnetic materials. If you are in a hospital to be scanned, then things like ferrous pins you might have holding bones together would prevent it. Today, most of those pins are made of non-ferrous alloys. They were led into a small classroom to the right of the entrance. To show them he wasn't fooling, the student took a large screwdriver and held it up to the blackboard. He took his hand away and the screwdriver stayed there. He said the machine is right through the wall. Now that was strong. Stan, Don's dad, came in a few minutes later. Don introduced Joey to his dad. I hear you're interested in magnetic resonance imaging. Don said, Joey is interested in everything. No harm in that, I guess. Tell me, have you ever had an X-ray? Yes, at the dentist, and I once fractured my arm. Well, an X-ray permits us to look at bone. The X-ray passes through the body, and the image is recorded on a sheet of film on the other side. Nowadays, that's more likely to be a plate that collects a digital image. Your dentist can see the roots of your teeth and any caries and teeth that need treatment. But soft tissue is something else. And a lot of our medical troubles happen in soft tissue. What do you know about tomography? I know it has something to do with sections. That's right, it's a way of imaging a section of the body. The original idea goes back to the 1930s. It was first used to fuzz out foreground and background objects in an X-ray to make the desired part of the image stand out. A CT scan is tomography done with X-rays. An MRI is done with magnetic fields and radio frequency signals. With an MRI, we can look at nerves and the brain itself. I must admit I'm puzzled. How can you see things with magnetic fields? Joey, I guess you've done that already. Has one of your teachers ever put a magnet under a sheet of paper or plastic and then sprinkled iron filings about? Yes, I'd forgotten about that. It shows the magnetic lines of force. Let's go take a look at the machine. They walked into the other room and saw a large cylindrical object with a center hole big enough to admit a human body. There was a sliding tray on which a person could lay that would move in and out of the aperture of the scanner in increments. The magnetic field Paul told you about is a very intense static field produced by the main coil. Have you heard of superconductivity? Joey thought a minute. Is that the effect you get when current circulates in a conductor at absolute zero? Very good. And what is absolute zero? Joey frowned. I first read about it in my older brother's chemistry book. It's the point at which molecular motion ceases, Stan said. Let me put it this way. It's the difference between driving across town at 5 in the afternoon versus driving on a country road at 2 in the morning. The coil in this machine is kept as close as we can get it to absolute zero. We bathe it in liquid helium. That works out to be about 4 degrees Kelvin or minus 269 degrees Celsius. There's about 2 miles of special wire in the coil, which is in superconducting mode. We charge the coil and the current keeps flowing, maintaining the field. But there are losses, so after 45 to 60 days we add energy to keep it going. Joey asked, "How strong is the field?" Stan responded, "It's strong. The Earth's magnetic field that you sense with a compass is about 30 to 60 microtesla, depending on where you are. The MRI field is 1.5 tesla. That's a lot." Joey said, "What is that field used for?" Stan smiled. "You probably know that your tissues are mostly water. With an intense enough of a magnetic field, the protons in the hydrogen atoms of your water molecules line up with the field. Think of it sort of like tightening a string. Now, if we pluck that string, it will give off a vibration that we can sense. In the scanner, we disturb the proton alignment in the main field with a radio frequency pulse. We also apply a magnetic field at right angles. When the pulse ends, the protons realign themselves with the main field, and in doing so, they give off signals which we record." Joey nodded. "But how does that become an image?" Stan smiled. "Come back and ask me that question when you're in grad school. It's something of a mathematical nightmare of rotating vectors. As you probably know, in TV, each individual image element is a pixel. In our work, we deal with volume elements." Stan asked, "Do you have a quarter?" Joey dug in his pocket and produced one. Stan took it and stood it on edge at the mouth of the MRI scanner. "What is a quarter made of?" Joey said, "My dad told me they were once made of silver, but now they're mostly copper." Stan said, "Is copper magnetic?" Joey was about to say no, but then he recalled something he'd read in his older brother's physics book. "It's not magnetic, but it's paramagnetic. I think that means it's weakly magnetic." Stan smiled. "Let's see, Joey. Knock the quarter over." Joey gave the quarter a tap with his index finger, and the quarter fell slowly. He set it up again and knocked it over again with the same results. "It's the magnetic field, isn't it?" Stan said, "Yes. In the presence of an ordinary magnet, you wouldn't see that effect. But in the intense field we have here, the paramagnetic properties become obvious." Stan showed Joey some of the images they'd made of the human body. It was as if a person had been sliced open and a picture taken, except it was a sequence of such images going through the body like a deck of playing cards. Joey was impressed. The next day was Saturday, and Joey was looking forward to a trip to the new California Academy of Sciences in Golden Gate Park. But it was not to be. After breakfast, his mother told him, "We haven't heard from Uncle Walter this week. It isn't like him. He usually calls me with a list of items he needs me to get when I go to Costco. He hasn't called, and he doesn't answer his phone when I call. Living in the woods like he doesn't have any neighbors who see him come and go. I know you want to go to the academy, but I think we'd better check up on Uncle Walter." Joey showed his disappointment. "We'll make it up to you. The academy will be there next week. I wish I could say that for Uncle Walter." Uncle Walter lived in Woodacre, and you couldn't see his house from the road. The driveway was gravel, and every few years the ruts had to be leveled out and another load of gravel added. Uncle Walter's car was parked in front, but there was no answer when they knocked on the door. Joey's mom had a key, and she opened the door. There were a few dishes in the sink and some food left out on the counter that the ants had gotten to, but no sign of Uncle Walter. Joey's mom remembered how he often took a morning walk on a path up into the woods. Since his car was here, she thought they ought to follow the path and see if he'd had an accident. Joey's older brother, Jeff, went with his mother. Joey stayed at the house just in case there were any phone calls. No sooner had they left than Joey went through the door that connected the kitchen to the garage. It was a nice big two-car garage, and Uncle Walter had converted it into a shop and a lab. He had a lathe, a drill press, a milling machine, and lots of hand tools. But over on the lab side was something Joey had never seen before. While Uncle Walter wasn't exactly a dumpster diver, he was fond of yard sales and had a way of coming up with things that were useless to their owners but somehow useful in one of Uncle Walter's experiments or inventions. In the middle of the floor was a metal door jamb, and the uprights had been wound with coils. Sitting nearby was the power unit for an arc welder, and it appeared to be wired to the coils. On the far side of the door jamb, an inflated mattress lay on the floor. Jutting out of the wall at right angles to the door jamb was a piece of PVC pipe. Attached to the pipe was copper-colored tubing that appeared to be corrugated, and at its end was a rectangular fitting that Joey would later find out was a microwave waveguide. The other end of this flexible copper piece was coming out of an old microwave oven. By total accident, Joey also noticed up in the rafters a projector of some sort, also at right angles to the door jamb. Joey mused. Had Uncle Walter been making his own MRI machine? Just then he spotted a notebook lying on top of a pile of Scientific Americans. It contained some sketches. Suddenly it all became clear. Whatever this thing was meant to do, it required that the subject of the experiment be airborne while diving through the door jamb. Hence the air mattress on the floor. If the apparatus didn't work, Uncle Walter would just land on the air mattress instead of the concrete floor. Good planning. But what had gone wrong? The arc welder supply appeared to be dead. On the bench were several empty lamp boxes that told Joey the light source up in the projector was ultraviolet. He followed the projector cord along the wall and plugged in a trouble light, like auto mechanics use, into the same outlet. He turned it on. Nothing. It and the arc welder power supply must be on the same circuit. It probably worked just long enough for Uncle Walter to get where he was going, but not long enough to make a return trip. This thing was a portal right out of a sci-fi story. Up on a pegboard, Joey found a 50-foot extension cord. He uncoiled it and plugged it into an outlet in the kitchen. The other end he plugged the projector into. The breaker box for the outlets was on the wall, and one was tripped. Before he reset it, he thought he'd better move the air mattress to the other side of the portal, just in case. Joey checked that everything was plugged in, and then he reset the breaker. The lights dimmed for a second before Uncle Walter materialized in midair and landed plop onto the air mattress. Joey thought, good thing my guess about where that air mattress was needed was right. Uncle Walter was a bit dazed. Joey brought a chair over to him to lean on so he could get to his feet. All he said to Joey was, I'm not sure where I was, but I sure don't want to go back. Joey went into the kitchen with him, and he sat down in his chair in the breakfast nook. Joey told him what he'd done. Thanks, Joey. Not a word of this to your mom. She's thought me crazy for years. I'll make up some story to tell her. Just follow my lead. Remember, I owe you one for everything you did. I won't forget.